Hi, my name is Mike Treader. I'm the Managing Director at the Institute for Ethics and Emerging Technologies, a nonprofit think tank that focuses on the development of new technologies and their intersection with modern society. And today I'm talking with Nina Paley, who is a spokesperson for the Voluntary Human Extinction Movement. So, Nina, why don't you tell us something about yourself?
Well, like Mike says, my name is Nina Paley, and I am an artist, a filmmaker, an animator, a cartoonist. My tagline for many years was America's best-loved unknown cartoonist, but now I'm kind of known, so I crossed the little un out on my blog.
Great. Okay, so we'll talk a little bit later on, perhaps, about some of the other things you're doing, your cartooning and movies and other interests. But the focus mainly today will be this vehement, V-H-E-M-T, the Voluntary Human Extinction Movement, of which you have been a member or a volunteer, I guess, for some years. So just to start out, tell me why you want to see humans go extinct. What the heck is so bad about people?
Well, okay, I can't see humans go extinct. I don't want to see humans go extinct on account of I would need to be dead in order to see that, and it just doesn't work out. Vehement is not really a proselytizing, or maybe it is. I don't know. I guess some people proselytize. I don't proselytize anymore. It's not even that I want to see the human race die out. That's not so much the goal. The point of it is that I consider it immoral for me to produce more human beings on a planet that has 7 billion human beings, where species are going extinct at a rapid rate, the fastest rate since the extinction of the dinosaurs. And there are even humans that are around that are dying of malnutrition and lack of care. So creating more humans in this situation is not justifiable.
So the name of the organization is the Voluntary Human Extinction Movement, which sounds to me as though, and if I read the information on the site, it sounds as though the goal, ultimately, would be to have everybody on the planet agree that it's best if we don't continue populating, and eventually the last generation of humans dies out. But you're saying that's not what you're in favor of?
Well, I'm in favor of it, but I'm not in favor of, I'm not trying to convince anybody. I can't convince anybody. I did a lot of proselytizing in my 20s when I thought that reproduction was based on some sort of rational decision, and this, it never occurred to me that it didn't actually have anything to do with rationality. So I don't proselytize anymore. I can contemplate the consequence, which is that yes, humans, if everyone decided to do this, humans would go extinct, and that to me is not a bad outcome. That, to me, means that all the rest of life on Earth would have a chance to actually exist and continue evolving, as opposed to what's happening now, which is where we have all this human activity driving other life forms extinct, reducing biodiversity, and probably creating a global catastrophe that's on par with whatever made dinosaurs go extinct 65 million years ago.
But you're then placing the value of other species above the value of the human species?
Yeah, well, I guess if there were a scale and you had human beings on one side of the scale and you had every other species on Earth on the other side, that those other species would, yes, they would outweigh just the one species, Homo sapiens.
What about the old adage of why can't we all just get along? Isn't there another choice rather than, wipe out or voluntarily allow humans to go away and no longer exist? Isn't it a better alternative for humans to just wise up and become better members of the better neighbors to the other species on the planet?
I am open to the possibility of humans evolving into something that is not what we know of as humans. So given what we know of humans know are not capable of living harmoniously with these other species. Even the hunter-gatherer, the idea of the hunter-gatherer, the noble savage idea that we have, That lifestyle was based on lots of slashing and burning, and certainly not sustainable at large populations. So what? I've lost my train of thought.
Okay. Do you have any idea how many people are supportive of your movement or sort of active in, you know, in promoting the idea that humans should voluntarily go extinct?
Well, there are three ways that people relate to the voluntary human extinction movement. There are volunteers. I'm a volunteer. I am voluntarily not reproducing, so I will go extinct. And then there are supporters. You're probably a supporter, where you agree that there's problems right now, that humans are having a very negative impact on the planet and other species and the biosphere, but perhaps you think that total voluntary human extinction, you wouldn't be okay with even the abstract idea of humans not living on the Earth. So those are supporters. And then there are potential supporters, who's everybody else. Now, in my life, I've met a lot of supporters, more supporters than volunteers, but I don't really know. I mean, it's not an organized organization. It doesn't have official membership. There's no real tracking. So I don't really know.
Well, I got a I had one child in my 20s many years ago who, and then I had a vasectomy. So I've reproduced at my ex-wife and I reproduced at below the replacement rate.
And it sounds like you're not going to make any more. So you could actually be a volunteer.
Well, I'm hesitant, quite hesitant, to have my name associated outside of as a critic of the movement. Even though, as you say, I do agree with the broader goals of reducing human population growth rates as much as possible, even reducing the total numbers of humans on the planet, if that were possible through voluntary and sustainable means. However, to say that I would be happy to see humans go extinct is certainly wrong. Unless you're talking about the eventual point where humans evolve, either naturally or through guided evolution that we employ to improve ourselves, the humans evolve into something beyond what we are today to become post-human, you know, something greater than human.
Yeah, I like the idea. I'm open to that possibility. It's just that at that point, what we call humans would be something different than what humans have been in the entire history of humans.
And that seems almost inevitable that, you know, evolution doesn't stand still. Humans have only been around for a couple million years in modern form, and in evolutionary time, that's not very long. So in another couple million years, even if we didn't take an active role in changing ourselves into something other than human, it would happen in any case. It would happen anyway.
Well, yeah, it's evolve or die. I mean, what we've got happening now is involuntary human extinction and also involuntary everything else extinction. Voluntary is the first word of the voluntary human extinction movement, and it's a very important component of it. But if we keep going the way we're going, maybe humans won't go extinct, but the amount of suffering that we're causing, again, not just to other life forms, but to humans ourselves, that's not sustainable.
Yeah, and right now, obviously, or at least it seems obvious to me that the numbers of humans on the planet is causing a problem. It's not the only reason that we have environmental problems.
What are the non-human caused environmental problems that we have?
No, I'm saying population is not the only cause. It's also consumption, as you've put it before. What impact equals population times affluence times technology, something like that.
Yes.
The iPad thing.
But population is always a multiplier.
Right. But my point there is, even if we were to see the population level out to exactly where it is today or even decline, that in itself would not cure the problems we have or mean that they wouldn't get worse. If we still had heavy consumption of fossil fuels, pouring more and more CO2 and other greenhouse gases into the atmosphere, even if we had fewer fewer actual numbers of humans, that in itself wouldn't necessarily mean we were living sustainably.
Right.
So is it fair to say that the voluntary human extinction movement is not really interested in total voluntary human extinction, that that's just sort of an attention grabber, and that in reality the movement is about reducing the rate of population growth?
No, it's not about reducing it. It actually is... Man, this is like trying to explain Dada or something. Yes, it is the voluntary human extinction movement. That's why it's called the voluntary human extinction movement. Most of us, I mean, I can only speak for myself, because again, I'm not any sort of elected spokesperson, and it's not any sort of hierarchical organization. But, you know, my understanding of humans is that humans are truly not capable of coexisting non-destructively with the rest of the biosphere. Again, there have been times in the past where our destruction was much less, but as you pointed out, our consumption was still really high. Like slash and burn agriculture is very destructive, but tribes that practiced it were relatively small, so it didn't have this huge global impact. On the other hand, supposedly little tribes of humans are what made all the elephant type species go extinct, all the mastodons and various other megafauna go extinct all over the world. So actually, probably even tiny little groups of humans were extremely destructive as well. So
I'm not sure you can only blame humans for being predators. Every carnivore species is predators, and even non-carnivorous species are competing for resources, competing for space, and so forth. That's the way life works. Life is biological life.
Oh, absolutely. No, I'm not talking about carnivorism or hunting or killing or anything like that. I'm talking about driving entire species extinct. We're an exotic invader. I mean, raspberries. You know, raspberries are sweet and nice, and they're not even carnivores, but they're driving other species extinct in Oregon, for example. They're just an exotic invader. What's another? Eucalyptus trees. They're not even hunters, but they're driving all sorts of other plant species extinct in California.
Okay, but without defending, I'm not trying to defend humans necessarily, but I just want to make the point that extinction is a natural part of natural selection, of evolution. Mm-hmm. The fact that 99% of all the species that have ever existed are already extinct has nothing to do with humans, because humans didn't drive 98% of those, or 98.9% of those
right.
species
it's,
extinct.
It's the extinction rate right now, that we are in the midst of a mass extinction. Of course species go extinct, but not at the rate that they are going at now that is attributable to human activity. It's very dramatic what's happening right now. And most of it is not because humans are being mean or bad, and most of it's not even because humans are being predatory or anything like that. The bat fungus, the fungus that's killing bats all over the world, nobody wanted that to happen. Nobody wants bats to die, but it's just a byproduct of the activity of humans traveling and carrying things.
But it does sound like you're saying that humans may not deliberately be acting mean or bad, but that intrinsically they are mean or bad. They are inevitably an invasive, destructive species. Isn't that
yes,
how you're
we're an exotic it? Invader. We're an invasive, destructive species, but that's not the same as mean or bad. That just means that the rest of life on Earth can't coexist with us because of our nature. We're not mean or bad at all. I mean, humans are very sad about this. Most people. I think most people are in one of the five stages of grief about the destruction of the biosphere. In fact, I think most people are in the denial state, and other people are in the bargaining state. The bargaining state, I think, is where all this green consumerism comes from. You know, buy this product and save the Earth. But, you know, clearly people are concerned.
So are you optimistic that enough people will sort of hear the message, or come to their own realization that not reproducing is a good choice, and that the vehemence goals will be reached at some point?
No, I'm not optimistic about that. I mean, they say that Vehement has two chances of success, slim and none. That seems about right.
How do you respond to people who say, well, if you're so despondent about the human race, and if you think we're such a cancer on the planet, why don't you just get it over with and off yourself?
Well, I'm going to die. Everybody's going to die. A lot of people don't realize that, but I do, and so there's no rush. I like being alive. In fact, everybody who is alive, I wish them the best life possible. That's another reason that I'm vehement, is that there are so many people who are already alive who are dying and suffering because of lack of care and lack of resources, and people keep making more babies in that situation when they could be helping the people that are already here. So everyone who is alive, once born, is entitled to the best life possible.
Unfortunately, the reproduction rate tends to be the highest in many of the poorest places. So where people have very little to live on to begin with, they also have very little access to birth control. And sometimes their economies are such that having children is actually, at least in the short run, an advantage to them, because it means more labor, more hands to go out and earn meager livings.
Right, or in the U.S., you know, in the U.S. there are incentives, there's welfare and things like that, which if you're really, really, really poor, those incentives might actually even make a difference. Not the tax incentives, but just welfare. So we have a situation where there is a kind of incentive for extremely poor people to have children, which is really unfortunate.
How do you feel about a step beyond voluntary, something like what China did, where they had a one-child policy and families could actually apply for the option to have, and I think pay for, the option to have more than one child? Would you favor other industrialized countries or other even non-industrialized countries adopting policies that created incentives and possibly even penalties to get people to reproduce at a lower rate?
I'm not really in favor of that kind of invasive government control, even when supposedly it you know, serves my ends. Just on principle, I think that kind of government control is really invasive and makes people miserable.
I know you spent some time living in India, at least a year or so. Did you have any exposure there to the problems of overpopulation?
You know, I was in Kerala, which actually has one of the more stable, their population is still growing, but the birth rate in Kerala is lower than in the rest of India. And actually, it was a pretty, I don't want to say functional. I mean, they have like all sorts of other issues there, political issues. And the literacy rate, unfortunately, in real life is not what the Kerala PR department says that it is. But it was fairly balanced. It wasn't like out of control population growth. The issue there that I really saw was the increase in consumption, that they had recently moved from organic garbage to synthetic garbage, and plastic was working its way into the system there, and people were buying things with more and more packaging, and there was no way to deal with the garbage that was generating. I don't think that was so much because of increasing population, it was because of increasing affluence and technology.
That raises an interesting question about the IPAT equation that we referred to before, which is, I believe the IPAT stands for IPAT, impact equals population times affluence times technology. Am I correct?
Yes.
Okay. So on the IPAT equation, if population, or if impact equals population times affluence times technology, the focus of Vehement seems to be entirely on the population factor in that equation. But isn't it,
yes,
as I said earlier, isn't it true that even if population went down, as long as affluence keeps increasing and rates of mainly industrial technology keep spreading, that the impact on Earth is still going to be just as bad, if not worse?
yes, theoretically you could have one person that just likes lots and lots of really destructive technologies, and they alone could destroy the Earth.
And isn't it also true that some newer technologies, let's say solar power, are less environmentally destructive, even sustainable? And so it's not that technology itself is an evil, just that we have to qualify which kinds of technology do more harm than good.
Yes, that's true. But back to the bargaining stage of grief, I think a lot of people are really looking to technology to save us. And for every advance in technology, there's some other technology that we have to throw away. It's really not, it's not happening. Like, yeah, sure, we're improving. You know, today's air conditioners are 15% more efficient than the air conditioners of 10 years ago. This is not going to save the planet. A Prius is more efficient than a car from 15 years ago. But if you buy a Prius and throw away that old car, there's garbage there. It is theoretically possible that we could come up with some really magical technology that doesn't require anything to be thrown away, and doesn't have any impact, and will somehow compensate for the, you know, recent history of toxic garbage that our technology has been creating and is continuing to create today. I'm not going to hold my breath for that, obviously, but okay, it's possible.
Yeah, I don't.
Then we're talking about magic rather than technology.
Right. Right.
But okay.
I agree, and I'm not one who holds out hope that there will be any sort of a magic fix, that all we have to do is wait for the next great technology to be developed in 15 or 20 years and all our problems will be solved. I think that's a problematic attitude in itself, because it encourages us to sort of ignore what's going on now and wait for, you know, the Caped Crusader to come and save us all, and that's not going to happen. Every technology does have trade-offs, no question about that.
And I should add that I think we're living much, much more efficiently than like a slash and burn agricultural tribe would be living.
Right.
So this is we've got great technology now that's actually allowing a population of this size to even exist.
Yeah. In fact, if it wasn't for the revolution in biotechnology, the revolution in modern agriculture back in the 1960s. In the 70s, we would have a lot more starvation. We couldn't support the numbers that are on the planet now. But that's an example of technology that is a double-edged sword, that both solves problems but at the same time creates problems, because we didn't have the terrible starvation that was envisioned by the Ehrlichs, who wrote about the population bomb in the 1960s. Mm-hmm. We've had the population bomb, but we haven't had the deaths from starvation because agriculture is so much more efficient now. However,
right, so other species that have been dying on our behalf. It's just, you know, humans aren't dying.
Yes.
We figured out how to make other species pay the price.
Right. Well, and that's the point, is that every technology has its trade-off. Even though we can now grow more food more efficiently, it does mean we're sending more pollutants into the biosphere in fertilizers and pesticides and so on. And we're tearing down forests in South America and Indonesia and elsewhere to grow crops, but at the same time driving species extinct that we haven't even discovered and you know, identified yet.
Yeah, and mining oil. I mean, most of modern agriculture is oil dependent.
Right.
And
right.
Of course, our oil dependency has led to the BP disaster, which is still growing and may have really, it may be voluntary human extinction, or sorry, involuntary human extinction. Involuntary human extinction may be in progress right now.
You actually think that that's a possibility?
Yeah, I do. Well, actually, here's the thing. I've gotten into some ridiculous arguments with friends of mine. It's like, well, would we go all the way extinct, or would there just be like lots and lots of suffering and, you know, a really ugly decline of population that's totally involuntary with people suffering and dying, and then there would still be some humans around. I mean, yeah, we probably won't go extinct. We're kind of tenacious that way. But
right.
All of that suffering, I'm really not into suffering. None of us are into suffering. May we live long and die out. You know, like I said before, good, healthy lives for everyone that's already alive. That's my goal.
But if you can admit, as you have, that the the sort of tacit, vehement goal of total voluntary human extinction, the disappearance of humans from the planet through a choice of everyone everywhere not no longer to reproduce, if that's not going to happen, as we can, I think, agree is not, and if we are probably going to live through the crises of this century of climate change and other things that we're facing, I guess
hold on just a second there. You say we are going to live through these crises.
We, the human species, won't.
I mean, yeah, Homo sapiens, but then it's sort of weird to identify with whatever's going to be left as as we, because culture as we know it isn't going to survive something like that. I mean, I'm a cultural creature, and, you know, the internet's gone. The internet's quite fragile. You know, electricity will be gone. All the kind of culture that I work in will be gone, and I'm not really that physically hardy, so if there's a big die-off, I'm probably not going to survive that either. I'm just saying that some human somewhere will probably survive.
And it sounds as if you're saying you do not identify with those survivors, that to you, you are you, and so you in this, as this creature of the modern technological urban society, that's you, but that you don't identify as part of a human species, a new civilization that might emerge from the crash of our present one. Is that
Well, I'm certainly a human being. I identify quite strongly as a human being. But, yeah, it doesn't seem too likely that, especially as I get older and older, that if there's a big die-off, that I'm going to be one of the, you know, tiny little percentage that survives. I'm not that physically hardy.
Yeah, but I think I've kind of
identified.
I mean,
do you? Like, if you imagine, you know, that science fiction apocalypse type thing, do you really think that you're going to, you know, that you would survive a major catastrophe?
Well, but probably not. However, I think that there's a philosophical point here we've identified, which is when I use the word we, and when you use the word we, we might be saying two different, we might be intending or meaning two different things. I use the word we to refer to basically everybody, all humans, both in the present and in the future. And I tend to think sort of globally and expansively that way. It sounds to me like when you're saying we, that for you, that identification exists more narrowly to yourself and people you know and sort of the immediate society in which you live.
Oh, it's funny that you bring that up, because actually I think that I identify very expansively. I just identify beyond Homo sapiens. I think I'm actually identifying with these other non-human life forms that we are killing, and that is actually the source of my grief.
Right. And that's another point that I wanted to get to. I'm glad you brought that up, because a question has to be asked about how we assign value to life. Do humans deserve sort of a higher priority rating in terms of who should be qualified for survival, because we are the only sort of metacognitive sapient species that we know of? We're the only species that has very complex language, that has writing, that has culture that carries on from generation to generation. And for many people, especially philosophers, that is a really high value and something that would be a tragedy if it was lost. Even if all the other species on the planet survived, if that human culture that we've created was to disappear, that would be an incalculable loss. Would you not mourn that loss yourself?
Well, absolutely. I mean, I love humans, and I love culture, and that would be really tragic. But as far as assigning value to the human species in relation to other species, I'm like, sure, okay, let's say Homo sapiens is worth 20 other species. Well, we still lose, right? I mean, considering the number of species that our activities are driving extinct, we've like way exceeded that. We're in debt.
Right.
You know, we've gone over our 20 species credit limit.
Yeah, but I think the argument is humanity is more valuable than any other species. Of course, you have to be careful about getting arrogant to the point where you say, therefore, no other species matter.
Well, but again, it's like, sure, like, humans are my favorite species. So name any other species, and I'm going to go like, yes, I like humans more than that species. If I had to choose between humans and that species, I would choose the humans. But then if you take all the other species, it's like, no, then I'm not going to do that anymore. We're not worth all the other species or even a large chunk of all the other species.
So about that trade-off, obviously we can say that it wouldn't make sense to say only humans should be valued or prioritized above all species, and even if all other species went extinct and only humans were left, that would be a good thing. That seems like crazy talk. I want, at least, to preserve as much biodiversity as possible. I still say that humans are so valuable, and human culture is so rich, and as far as we know, unique in the whole universe. This intelligent idea creating, music making, literature
planet
writing,
killing.
Culture. are you really saying our sins are worse than our accomplishments?
No, it's not even about that. I love humans. I really do. If I didn't love humans, I wouldn't be an artist. Everything I do is for humans.
But you'd be happy to see us go away.
But I what?
You would be happy to see us go away?
There's no happy there. First of all, I wouldn't be able to see you go away except in my, or us go away except in my imagination. It's true that everybody who's here today is going to die. And that makes me sad. I'm going to die, you're going to die, everyone we know is going to die, everyone who makes up the culture that we live in today is going to die. And that's very sad, and I won't be happy to see that happen. I mean, I'm not going to see that happen. I'll die before all of that happens. But, we're going to die. It's a big bummer. We're going to die. We don't have to take the rest of the biosphere with us, though. And, yeah, I would really like the rest of the biosphere to be able to thrive and live and be healthy. And it's just not going to happen with, persistent humans as we know humans. Again, humans could evolve, that also will include the generation that we have now dying.
It really sounds to me, though, like you're creating you're defining the problem as an either or. Either humans go away and the planet gets happy and fruitful again, or humans continue to rape and destroy the Earth.
Or they evolve into something that's not humans as we know them. Humans as we know them do that.
All right. It's going to take a while for that evolution to take place.
Yeah, I know.
So realistically, I'm trying to look at how we get from where we are now to a little happier place, more sustainable, more social justice, and so on. And it's not an easy thing to do at all.
Yeah, but it sounds like you're trying to think of how you can make other people get to that place. All we can do is, the only thing we have control over is ourselves, and even that is pretty iffy. So this idea of, like, how do we make the entire human race evolve, that's not anything that you have any power over. It's, I understand it's a desire. I have that desire as well. But we can only do things with our lives right now. And, in terms of real environmental impact, if I want to do something that will be best for the planet, it's going to be to choose not to reproduce. I mean, some would say, like, oh, why don't you just kill yourself? And it's true, from a planetary perspective, yeah, if I could make one less consumer and polluter on the planet. My air conditioner is running right now, and so if I weren't here, then I wouldn't be responsible for the running of that air conditioner. But like I say, I balance this with my belief that all humans who are alive should have the best, healthiest lives that they can. So I'm a true lover of life for myself and for others. But that, that personal choice in terms of what can I do that's best for the planet, refraining from reproduction is number one.
And yet, it sounded like you were saying that you're not interested in trying to convince others of that, to take that same approach.
Well, I'm here for the, I'm here to let people know that at least, you know, here I am taking that approach. So if you're thinking of it, then you're not alone. And there's a huge condemnation for people that make this choice, especially women. People actually say that it is selfish not to have children, which has always struck me as just, you know, 100% wrong. It is, or it can be, selfless not to have children. That said, I have to qualify all of this with just admitting that I am child-free, and that if I had no environmental consciousness at all, I would probably still be child-free. And by child-free, it just means that I don't want to have kids. So for me, it's not even a sacrifice. At the same time, though, I am really concerned about the environment, so I'm both child-free and vehement. If I weren't child-free, I would probably, yes, I probably would be making this sacrifice. But the fact is, it's no sacrifice for me because I'm just not interested.
Did you never hear your biological clock ticking and desire to hear the pitter-patter of little feet on your floor?
No, I've never had that. It's kind of amazing because I'm constantly told that everybody has that.
Right.
Everybody wants kids. And I can see it with other people. I mean, I like I said before, I love people, and many of my friends have children. And I really want to understand why. And I have theories as to why, actually. And I'm going to be writing about this.
Why we want to reproduce?
Yeah. Well, why
I mean,
somebody...
It's the most natural urge there is.
Well, are you saying that I'm unnatural?
For the most part.
Right. I can tell you don't have a control.
Sure.
But if it's so natural, why don't I have it?
Well, because you're an aberration.
You are an aberration. I'm an aberration, but I'm very human, you know? I'm very, very human. And I
You're
love
lovely,
other
wonderful
humans.
Human.
So it's like, what is up with this? Like why do I and apparently 10%
right.
of people, what's going on with us? I mean, we're not monsters. I get really tired of people just going,
right.
like, that's so unnatural, you must be a monster,
right.
especially when I feel so much love for humans and, like I say, for the rest of the biosphere.
Well,
so
one
I really
of the reasons
do,
I'm...
Yeah, go on.
One of the reasons I'm hopeful, somewhat, guardedly, pessimistically hopeful about the future is that we have seen that cultures can kind of evolve and adopt more sustainable approaches to living. Western Europe, you know, the population growth rate there is actually below replacement level. The birth rate is below replacement level. If it wasn't
Not
for
Not in all countries. It
immigration,
is in Estonia. But like you said, yeah, you're right. They're making up for it with immigration. Exactly.
If it wasn't for immigration, those countries wouldn't be growing. Same thing with Russia. Russia is actually shrinking in population. I'm hopeful that you and I, because I am no longer reproducing and only have one child, you and I will not be aberrations, even though we might be, quote, unnatural in the sense that it's natural for humans to, for every animal, every plant, to aim for reproduction. That's the selfish gene talking. That
Can I interrupt? I just want to say something about that selfish gene. I think there's also maybe the selfish meme, and that participating in culture is another way to like dip your toe into the river of life, and that my need, my profound need to connect with life through culture, I think might actually be that really basic need that other people are talking about when they're talking about reproduction. And for all I know, maybe that is the transition, the you know evolutionary transition that we're talking about. That maybe you know biological reproduction is not the only kind of reproduction we can participate
right.
in, and that there's actually cultural reproduction.
That's interesting. That's kind of like the selfish gene converted to Richard Dawkins' selfish meme.
Yeah.
And where so there may not be any physical little Ninas running around in the world of the future, you've created enough art and culture that there's going to be little Sitas running around in the future.
And I'm not even creating
way,
it. It's just like it's just like gene reproduction. There's just bits of things that are synthesized as they move through me. It's just things recombining in me, and my participation in culture is just that all the culture of the past, or not even all of it, strains of the culture of the past are in me, and they combine in me, and then I, you know, let go of them into the world, and then they're free to combine into other mimetic life forms.
All right. So that seems like a kind of a scenario in which the human natural genetic biological drive to reproduce can be diverted into a mimetic drive to reproduce, whether or not we survive or reproduce or have physical offspring, we can have ideas and cultural offspring. And if we can get the same kind of inner satisfaction from that that many people, most people, I suppose, get from having children and grandchildren, then maybe that's a good replacement.
Maybe. I mean, I've been thinking about this a lot because since making Sita, I've had moments where I'm like, God, you know, I feel like a soccer mom. And having to go from one place to another and get tapes made and run to FedEx, you know, right before closing time and all these obligations, and, you know, it all just feels so stupid and it's so exhausting. But then I say, like, oh, but it's all worth it. It's all worth it. And that's actually a joke among child-free people, is that parents will complain about all this work that they're doing, all the suffering they're doing for the kids. But it's like, oh, it's all worth it. And it's like, yeah, I think I don't think I got a get-out-of-suffering-free card by not having children. I'm just making the same sacrifices. And I don't even want to call them sacrifices, but I'm having a similar kind of devotion, similar kind of suffering with the art.
So up until, what, a year or two ago, you were America's best unknown cartoonist, and now you say you scratched out the un from your logo because you've achieved some measure of renown for the success of your animated film, Sita Sings the Blues. We'll post a link to that and to those other things that we've been talking about.
I am so dreading becoming associated now. Like, one of the great things about Sita was that nobody associated that with the voluntary human extinction movement. And you're right, like, the very name voluntary human extinction movement is, like, really off-putting to a lot of people. On the other hand, hopefully they'll stick with it and understand that it's about love.
But the point that we were just talking about, that there is there are other ways to sort of create other than creating babies, that one can create art or culture or ideas or write books or, you know, symphonies or invent things, whatever it might be. There are ways to create and have something that you have been responsible for that carries on after you are gone.
And also, this relates to culture is alive. It's alive as much as you and I are alive. And it is sort of, it's ironic that I'm in vehement when all of the work that I do, the environment that culture lives in, is in fact human beings. So my love of culture translates to a love of human beings. My love of other species is greater, but this is a close second for sure.
Yes, and of course, my point of view is that you don't have to choose one or the other, that we can have a surviving, thriving human culture and a surviving, thriving biosphere. We're not there yet. We're not close to that. But I'm a believer that we either give up and kill ourselves, which I don't want to do, or we go on and do better than we've done in the past.
Well, sure. A lot of people are also in the process of killing themselves by not giving up. So in many cases, our best intentions lead to self-annihilation. Just wanted to throw that out there.
Yeah, well, you're right. More awareness is definitely a good thing. Now, talking about culture, you're also kind of an advocate of something called a free culture movement. Can you explain what that is?
Well, like I say, culture's alive, it's not property. Life just is not property. That's true of humans. That's true of animals, in my opinion, although many people would differ. And it's true of culture as well. I believe that the more you own something, the more you kill it. And back to environmental destruction, I think a big cultural problem with humans as they relate to the environment is that they believe that they own it, which is killing it. And, yeah, I've just seen the same thing in culture. People own culture, and that means that the culture is not free to reproduce through other people. People are not free to make copies of it. They're not free to interpret it. And this is killing culture.
So that's a nice abstract description, but in practical terms, you're talking about things like reform of copyright laws?
Yeah, reform or, well, okay, since I've already outed myself as a total radical that nobody's going to agree with. I'm actually an abolitionist. I don't think we actually need copyright, not in the digital age. I think it may have had some use. Well, copyright was always designed and always made for the benefit of publishers, not for artists. And during the era of the printing press, those publishers were essential for the mass dissemination of information. So to that extent, you could say, like, well, you know, we needed to do something that the publishers liked. But publishers didn't even need it. Copyright's a monopoly, and it's really unnecessary. It does not actually benefit culture. There's more of a free market of ideas without monopolies, and I just don't see monopolies really benefiting anyone. It benefits some people's business models, but there's lots of room to make money without commercial monopolies, as we see in all these other industries like fashion and food, or I should say other cultural areas of culture. So I just don't see any, you know, evidence that copyright is in any way beneficial.
So you'd like to see less reproducing of humans and more reproducing of culture?
Absolutely. That's it in a nutshell.
Okay. All right. Well, we're going to have to wrap it up here. It's been an interesting discussion. I expect the commenters will have fun arguing both points of view, or all three or four points of view, however many there might be. I really appreciate your taking the time and being willing to put yourself out there. And for anybody who hasn't seen Sita Sings the Blues, it's on very limited release, but you might get a chance to see it in your town. I hope you do.
Oh, you mean theatrical release? It's an unlimited virtual release.
Right. Since culture should be free,
it's free.
You can download it for free, and it's very much worth doing. I got to see it in a theater here in New York and absolutely loved it. So, Sita Sings the Blues by Nina Paley. Run, don't walk, to go find it.
I have a new comic strip called Mimi and Eunice, which you can see at mimiandeunice.com. And I have a blog, ninapaley.com. And boy,
okay,
am I dreading the kind of hate mail I'm going to get.
Yes.
Well.
Well, we'll post those links to your comic strip and also to your blog, and we'll find out how many people want to send you some love.
I love you all, my fellow humans.
All right, thanks, Nina, and look forward to talking to you again sometime.
Thanks.
Bye.